This is Scott Elmquist. I'm a photographer with Style Weekly. I worked with Jim in the early 2000s when he was publisher.
Yeah. When you met him then, under what circumstances?
He came in as, I'm trying to remember who he replaced. I think Sarah Fender. He came in as publisher, and it was instantly became, you know, really pretty good friends with him. I mean, we knew we had business to do, and mm-hmm. But he's just such a character that it was always sort of with a wink and a nod. Okay, we'll get our business done, and then, you know, let's go have a beer. Or,
yeah.
You know, I think when we really bonded was when the Stones played over in Charlottesville, mm-hmm. and he wanted to write a review of it. So as publisher, he's like, I'm going to write the review. I'm not going to let any writers go. Yeah, so yeah. He said, like, Scott, you want to go? I was like, of course. So, you know, we hopped in the car and then we just sort of hit it off. And that was interesting because that became sort of our thing, was to go out and see music together. Mm. So I don't know if people really knew that Jim, even he played all the time, but he spent a lot of time going out to see music.
Yes, he did.
So that was one of the things that he and I did together, which was really cool because I don't play. Mm-hmm. And so we'd go have dinner and we'd watch probably some classic rock band that everybody thinks, like, you know, oh, you went to see Jethro Tull or the Tubes or something. Yeah. But he was so into it.
Right.
And it was just such a kick because everything he did, he would just laugh hysterically the whole way through because he loved it so much.
Right. We've had some people talk a little bit about Jim Wark, the journalist. Can you speak about that side of him?
Well, it's my memory's a little fuzzy from back then. All I remember was he was so so positive for, you know, to leave us alone. I mean, he was always hands off. Mm-hmm. He was like, you guys know what you're doing. I know what I'm doing. I'm going to leave you alone. You do your thing. So probably the easiest publisher that I've ever worked for, because he just let us do our thing. And that was back in the day, we were really, really rocking. And he knew it, and he just left us alone.
Yeah.
So he was easy to work for.
Well, I can tell you as a journalist that's very rare to have a publisher who's that sort of hands off and allows you to shine, you know, without him being the puppet string master, you know?
Yeah, and he was always the guy that, you know, would sort of put his arm around you and say, hey, you're doing a good job. And a lot of times in journalism, that's half the battle because, you know, you're not making any money anyhow. So you have somebody that really appreciates what you're doing, and he really meant it. He was so sincere about it and really cared about, you know, everybody on staff. And so it was just a sort of a bright light in my career to have him as my publisher.
Yeah. A lot of people have talked about what a natural collaborator that he was, how he was someone who could pull different people together for a common good. Can you speak to that?
Well, sure. I mean, I saw that probably, you know, I got roped into doing Hamaganza with
uh-huh.
Jim, and that sort of was early, you know, probably mid-2000s, and just watching him be able to, you know, negotiate all the big personalities that was part of Hamaganza, and mm-hmm. it was a lot of big personalities.
Right.
And Jim would just sit back and sort of run the show without running the show. Mm-hmm. He would let, you know, everybody else take credit, but you could see that everyone was looking to him to sort yeah. of to say, okay, this is good or bad, or this isn't working. And he would say it. If it's not working, it's not working. But he would say it in a way that it wouldn't offend anyone.
Mm-hmm.
So he could step out of his role of like publisher and into the band leader without being the band leader, and to let, you know, the other folks with the big personalities take the credit. But he was sort of running the show.
Yeah, that's a rare yeah. quality, a rare trait.
Yeah, and I'm a terrible guitar player, but he backed me. He figured out how to back me up, and had some. I sang the Dirt Woman Blues, and he had this little electric a lead in there that just, I looked back at him, he's just back there grinning, he's like, you can do it, you can uh-huh. do it, you know, uh-huh. So that's sort of the theme of Jim, is it was, I felt he was always on my side. I mean, and he almost seemed like a big brother to me, because he, and we're not that far apart in age, but he was just like the guy that had a lot of wisdom and never, never sort of let you down.
Mm-hmm. When did you find out about Jim's musical abilities? When did that?
I think it was all part of the Stretchin' series that BJ Cosin was doing. So that started out in Ashland, and BJ was putting together shows. And so I went out to see a lot of those early shows, and that was probably early or mid 2000s, and BJ was doing bringing a lot of bands through, and they would play, and so Jim was part of that. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we became such good friends. He and BJ played some Dylan tunes at my wedding.
Oh wow!
Yeah, so they played. So that was really really neat.
Right, on acoustic or electric?
On acoustic.
I was going to say.
No, they busted out the acoustic.
You know, Jim wasn't a big fan of the acoustic.
No,
guitar.
But he did. He did. Yeah, he.
For you, he'd do it. Huh?
He did it. That was a nice wedding present.
People have also been talking about his wicked sense of humor, or I should say, his dry sense of humor. Yeah. Speak to that a little bit. I can remember some sort of meetings, editorial meetings that I had that ended in laugh riots.
Oh, well, Jim's like, it was classic. I mean, almost everything ended with a big laugh, didn't it? Mm. I mean, he didn't take anything that serious. I mean, he got his stuff done, but I remember just the outrageousness of Hey McGann's and you know, how he would be like the running laugh track. You know, I don't know. It's either him or BJ Kosin that you know, they're the funniest guys in the room.
Yeah, they were potent.
So yeah,
duo.
So you just, you know, I just, and then watching him go out to the Tin Pan, and which is a pretty low key venue, mm-hmm. but Jim was just Jim, and he would just howl, you know, yeah. and he would jump out of his chair. Like the last show we saw were the Tubes, and there's a Fee Waybill up there, and it was just outrageous. And Jim was jumping out of his chair and running over and doing, you know, shots with his iPhone, and he would just, you know, right in front of everybody, yeah, he would just stand there in the middle of the whole thing and laughing. You know, it was perfect.
So. Right, and I think, you know, many seasoned musicians, not all of them are like that. Right. Some of them actually, I think, might even hate music,
yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
He was so enthusiastic.
Yeah, he really was. He really was. So it was always, you know, such a good time to, you know, to hang out with Jim when we could go see some music.
What's his legacy, do you think?
Hmm.
It seems to be all over the place.
Yeah, but I just think that it's, for me, it's just like he was such a stand-up guy that in the end, If you had to just look around Richmond and say, you know, who is the most stand-up guy that you've probably ever known, I would have to say Jim Warwick. I mean, because did he ever do anyone wrong? No. I don't think so. He didn't really offend anybody. And look what he did. He left the publisher of Style and went into teaching and you know, in his 50s.
Yeah.
Who does that?
I mean,
that's, you know, so he's just a complete stand-up guy and just an all-around good guy. And it seemed to be everybody's friend, too. So I just don't know how you stack up against that.
But weirdly, when I remember back to that and him telling me he was doing that, it seemed like the most natural thing in the world for him to be doing.
Yeah.
Anybody else, I'd be like, what?
Yeah.
But no, Jim, that sounds just right.
Yeah, I went and got his teaching certificate and then went, you know, and went and taught for 5 years. So that was, you know, the one other thing though that I, you know, about Jim that I saw a couple times was that he could be, you know, deeply emotional about, there was a family member that was sick. And, you know, then I saw a whole different side of Jim. I mean, that guy really cared. I mean, his family mm-hmm. was like first and foremost to him. So, you know, he was really a sort of multi-layered guy. And not many people saw that, but you know, I did a few times. And,
right.
and so that was, it was really touching.
Sean McLean did, but did you ever see Jim mad? I was trying to think. I may have seen it once.
No, I never saw him mad. No, I never saw him mad. I mean, and I rode, we almost didn't see the Stones because we were caught in traffic, and he still didn't get mad. So,
anything else to share about Jim?
No, I mean, you know, it's like I think the thing that'll stick in my mind is. I think the happiest I ever saw him was at the Folk Fest when he was just walking around the Folk Fest and he just loved that. And so that was that. And then going out and seeing music, you know, or, you know, obviously on stage he was happy, but, you know, just to see him at the Folk Fest, he just understood what a enormous success it was and how many people came together mm-hmm. for that cause. And he was part of it. And I think he just relished in that.
Yeah. There've been talks about doing some sort of tribute to him, whether it's something affiliated with the Folk Festival or even perhaps a local music award named after him, because that was something he always talked about, was doing that. What are your thoughts on that? How would we best
tribute? I think both. I think there should be a big tribute concert, and any kind of ongoing legacy award would be, you know, we just can't forget this guy. I mean, so there's any way that we could honor him would be perfect. I think as many as you can do.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you.